Support for WKAR is provided by Fluke Hearing, finding ways to help people hear like nature intended. With 16 locations, including Lansing, Jackson, Grand Rapids, and Ann Arbor, FlukeHearing.com. And by Liberty Coin Service, now open with a new location in Frandor, offering gold buying and coin collecting services in one combined location for more than 40 years. LibertyCoinService.com.
Welcome back to Current State. It's Monday, February 11th. I'm Mark Bayshore. We're glad you're here. Before we get to our first guest this morning, we're following breaking news from the Vatican. As you've probably heard by now, around the world, the Roman Catholic Church is reacting with surprise at the announcement that Pope Benedict XVI is resigning. The Pope will resign February 28th. This is the first time in six centuries that this has ever happened. We've got the Bishop of Lansing on the line, the Most Reverend Earl Boyer, to talk about the Pope's resignation. Good morning, Bishop Boyer.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
I am well, thank you. Pope John Paul II left an enormous legacy, a global evangelizer, a man who reached out to Jews and Muslims. What do you think Pope Benedict XVI's legacy is likely to be?
Oh, I think primarily as a teacher. He's been a very, very, he was always a professor, and I just think that his great gift is that of teaching. Those three volumes that he's produced on Jesus of Nazareth are just spectacular books. I think that you hit something there, you know, about John Paul II being a great world evangelizer. I think that's probably why Benedict is resigning, that he no longer can do that. His doctors told him he can't travel, and with the World Youth Day coming up in Brazil in August, I think that he knows the Pope has to be there, and if he can't be there, then someone should. So I think that's probably why this is happening.
Did the Lansing Diocese feel any direct effect of his papacy in the last 8 years?
Primarily, again, as I would say, in his teaching, that it's been very solid. He's just a really fine, fine teacher.
The last Pope to resign, I'm told, was Gregory the 12th. In 1415, that's nearly 600 years ago, will the conclave to elect a new pope be any different than the usual procedure whenever a pope dies?
Well, the only difference will be they usually had, a week or 9 days of mourning for the death of a pope, and they won't have that. So they'll really just go right into the preparations for the election itself.
Bishop Earl Boyer of Lansing, thanks very much for joining us this morning on Current State.
Blessings on you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Well, MLive's Angela Whitrock joins me for our first segment of Current State this morning. Back in 1967, Lansing's Joel Ferguson became the first African-American to serve on the Lansing City Council at the age of 28. He went on to become the first black to serve on the Ingham County Board of Commissioners as well. Thereafter, his career trajectory soared as, over many years, he became one of Lansing's most influential people in business, politics, and community service. He's the founder and president of Ferguson Development. He's active in Democratic Party politics statewide and nationally, and he also serves as president of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees. In 2007, Joel Ferguson received the NAACP's Freedom and Justice Award. A pleasure to welcome Joel Ferguson
to
Current State. Nice of you to join us. Let's start with local development right now. Where do all of the various parties stand with regard to the Red Cedar Gateway project?
The project's moving forward. There's going to be some announcements coming soon. I feel the announcements should come from the mayor, and so I'm going to be candid, but I'm not going to be that open. I feel that we have a number of things happening, and it's going to be really positive what's going on here in Lansing, and it'll be happening. The announcement will be coming soon.
So we're told that your proposal hasn't been officially selected, but for all intents and purposes, it has been officially selected. That will be what we see going up.
You're going to see you're going to see what's been proposed happening. And hopefully it'll happen all at once. And there's going to be a positive announcement in a definitive way on what's happening on the west side of the site in a very near future, and the discussions right now are just talking about how we're going to handle the drainage and the clean water, and just how we're going to handle the river, and just how the buildings will be laid out.
You think the original goal of really beautifying that, that transitional space between Lansing and East Lansing, you're gonna will be accomplished eventually?
Well, I feel it will be, and I think it'll be a game changer for Lansing and East Lansing and for the mid-Michigan area. I think it'll be a destination place, what we're going to have on the site. But all the particulars, there'll be, you know, an official awarding the site soon. And there'll also be a definitively exactly what's going to happen and how it's going to happen on the site. Working with Mayor Bernero and Bob Trezise, I think we'll have something really interesting for everyone to see.
There's been, the site was sort of abandoned or shuttered by the city for many years, and there's been some talk about whether it would ever be reopened to the public as a park space. Can you talk a little bit about...
Oh, that has to happen. I mean, what we do in the commercial part of the property is one thing. But there's going to be a park with total access for the citizens of mid-Michigan to use that. And hopefully it'll be something that everyone will want to be at and use. And it really helps the development also. And one thing that I've proposed, that the developers have a degree of responsibility to maintain the park. And I'm doing that in a selfish way also, because right now, cities' budgets are such that where we, you know, you're right around. That's not the first priority right now. Public safety is number one, and so I feel that we should have right in our agreements that we have to have money set aside to maintain the public access in the park for perpetuity. So I think that's very, very important that the open space, and I think it's also important that. Once we're selected, all of us, that we sit and we work with the community activists to where they have some input on how that looks and how that functions for the citizens. I mean, I really feel that it's a team effort on this entire development, and it's and we have to work together.
What would your advice be to East Lansing officials and other developers who want to make something of the old bank building in those areas in downtown Lansing?
My advice to them would be to find a way to acquire some additional properties. Doing what's necessary in East Lansing on a postage stamp does not ensure a real success.
There have been, I think, 7 proposals were submitted on Friday to the city of East Lansing for the city-owned land there around the old bank building. And many of the developers are talking about acquiring those tax-issued properties, the old bank building, et cetera. And one of the proposals actually came from your partner in the Red Cedar development, Chris Jerome. Are you involved in that at all, or are you aware of any of that?
Not at all. I'm using a rifle in Lansing right now. I mean, I'm all in to make the Red Cedar work, and all my energy in this area is on that. And so, no, I've never discussed it with Chris at all.
Is there a reason you were not not interested or not, I guess, taken with doing development there in East Lansing?
I'm not interested right now. I'm really, it's a full-time job to move the dirt, to work with the drainage, to design the building, to work with all the moving parts on that, to have the park, everything else. And so I'm all in on this project in this area. I mean, this is what I'm doing, and I want to make this happen here. And so I've told Chris in the summer when he was talking about East Lansing, I asked him the question. I said, "Why are you interested?" I said, "You know, I'm all in for Lansing." And so I've never discussed it with him since. So what he has in, that's him.
Your development, your condo or apartment development there in Old Town, is it condos or apartments?
It's a condominiums.
Condominiums in Old Town was an important spark for that neighborhood. Is there unfulfilled potential in Old Town, or is this as good as it gets, do you think?
Old Town is thriving. We overbuilt for Old Town when we did it, and we did it on purpose. We felt that if we didn't put some really effort and spend some money there, we couldn't help turn Old Town around. So we our condos are first class there. And at the time, we were ahead of what the community was going to be. And so it's really a vibrant area. You know, that's where offices should be. People, restaurants, a new restaurant, meet across the street. People are there. I mean, it's a total great area, and it really says something for Lansing. And I'm glad that we're a part of it. That's where my office is, and I took an old warehouse. We also paid for the river trail. That river trail that we got all the wrought iron fencing and all that, that's what we did. Our monies did that.
Okay.
You mentioned you built sort of ahead of where where Old Town was at that moment, but where you thought it was going to be. A lot of times when new developments are announced in the Lansing area, there's some pushback. You know, oh, people don't want luxury condominiums. That's too much money. Do you think this sort of aspirational building of higher-end properties is important to help a town move forward?
That's a great question. Well, we just felt that if we didn't make a statement to where Old Town would be a destination place, it wasn't, you know, if we did price some people out, we only built 20 units. But when you look at the brick, the facade, everything else we did, we had to make a statement that this should be a destination place. And so I feel that you can never take back quality. That you have to have quality to make something very attractive and make people want to be there. So, again, on the Red Cedar project, we're going to do something that's going to be extremely first class. We're going to have facilities where people want to be. And that's important because then you have a domino to where everything else happens around it. But if you go on the cheap and don't do it right, then you really have a retarded what should be. It's a great question, though.
Thank you.
You certainly wouldn't quarrel with more retail in Old Town, though, would you?
I think retail should keep growing, and I'm very excited about retail here on the Red Cedar property. Make that a destination place, and it helps all the adjacent businesses also, because when people come to us on purpose, they stop by their places by accident. You know, everything feeds off of each other.
Real quick, back to the question of the park stewardship. You know, there was a pretty high-profile incident with the Detroit City Council rejecting the state's offer to take care of Belle Isle, essentially. With the budget crunches facing cities, do you think that, you know, this sort of model of developers and or outside entities being stewards for public parklands is something we're going to see a lot more of?
I don't believe it's necessary here in Lansing. I believe that we're indirectly a steward, but that property is still going to belong to the city. Mm-hmm. But I feel our role should be to assist the city, because we're in this with them to maintain that property. We asked the citizens to, if we could have this property to develop. So we have a degree of responsibility also, you know, that they've given something to us to do a commercial development, and we have to give something back to them. And what we should give back to them would be right in our covenant, our agreement that there's going to, that property will always be maintained for the public use. And I feel that that's a responsibility that we should do. And recognizing budget times and everything else, then allows the city to be spending their resources in another direction also.
We're talking with Ferguson Development's Joel Ferguson. Joel is also the president of the MSU Board of Trustees. There's a pretty intense discussion right now over the state leadership of the Democratic Party. Do you favor a new leader?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us why?
I feel that Mark's done an excellent job through the years. And it's kind of like any athletic team or anything else you have, that sometimes, even though you're happy with someone, if your goal is to get to another level, and sometimes having a change to try to get to a different level, it's not demeaning the person who's there, but where we are right now is not, as a party, is not where we should be. And so, and it's not saying that it's anyone's fault, but we should give someone else a chance to try.
What are the weak spots right now with the party statewide? I mean, there have been years where they've swept state, well, where, you know, there was the big Obama win this November, but still statewide we had Dems had a hard time picking up seats. So what's the problem?
Well, the problem is really simple. We lost in the wrong year, losing in 210 and allow the state, the Republicans, to gerrymander the state, we received more votes in the congressional race than they did. But since they gerrymandered the districts, they ended up with more seats in Congress, and that's across the board in the House and the Senate. I mean, we lost the statewide and lost control of all three branches in the wrong year. You can't lose it the year that they're going to set the apportion and set the districts for the next 10 years. And so there's nothing wrong most people are Democratic and voting Democratic in Michigan, but we lost the wrong time. That's why we're kind of really messed up right now.
Does the party need to open up to, is the party too beholden to the UAW?
The UAW works hard not to be the biggest dog in the room. And so that's kind of, when you tell a lie too long, it becomes the truth. The UAW wants the party to be all-inclusive. And what individuals have to start doing is attending the conventions and being more active. The UAW wants people there to do that. So that's not really a fair charge on the UAW at this point.
What do you expect to happen at the party get-together on the 23rd?
I think something healthy. Back in the old days, I was the chair of the McGovern delegates at the National Convention. And we were up all night because it wasn't a scripted convention. And one way we've lost interest now is the National Conventions are infomercial. That's why you're not covering any more of the media. And as far as the state conventions are concerned, we need just a real bare-knuckle fight there that gets people involved to where the thing's not scripted and not pre-decided before they get there. And that's going to get more individuals participating.
Do you support Lon Johnson for the party chair?
Yeah, I am.
You do? Okay.
Yes,
what do you like about him?
He's able.
He can evolve the party in the way that you want to.
I hope so, though. He's talking to me about raising money, and I said, well, as you're raising money, you better work on how we're going to spend the money. You know, sitting up there spending almost $1 million to defeat the Republican speaker and ignoring House races that were winnable is just a kind of mispriority of how you're going to run a party and how you're going to be really effective. Let some other body rule if the person should or should not be the speaker. But let's go ahead and be positive and make a right to elect strong Democrats in districts if with a little more funding they'd win. So just raising money and not having a plan how you're going to spend it, be like me as a developer, having a lot of money and turn around and not working with the citizens, not communicating with the mayor, not working with Bob Trezise, and just getting out there and building what I think should be as opposed to what we all think should be, is not going to be something that ensures success. And so money does not ensure success if it's not planned properly.
What can the party or folks who are passionate about Democratic politics, what can they do to make sure that those decisions are improved? You mentioned down-ticket spending has sort of been misprioritized. How do you change that?
Well, they have to participate. And they have to recognize that while the media says that labor and everything else is running the party, they're not really. They want everyone in it because they want us to be successful. You know, winning a convention and losing an election is not success. So if we have people showing up and being part of the conventions and being part of the all the local politics, like Tip O'Neill once said, all politics is local. If we get people being a local and have their voices, one reason we're in the position we are with Red Cedar today is because of the local people. It's because of the environmentalists and the community activists to where they've really set a tone. This is wonderful. And I think your question has been off the chart, and your involvement is great.
Thank you.
Do you regret Prop 2 back in November? Was that a mistake to pursue that so vigorously?
Boy, I would have sat there and worked hard with the governor longer.
Okay.
But one thing about him, he's honest. There's things that happen in any party that you don't always agree with, but if he said, if you don't do this, I won't do that, I would have trusted his word.
What's, you know, in the wake of Prop 2 and then right-to-work legislation, what's your take on how that's going to impact the Democratic Party? A lot of folks felt it was sort of attempting to cut the party off at the knees. Do you feel like it's going to impact the party that much?
It won't impact the party if people start participating aggressively. I mean, I don't think the party's a one-issue party. I think it's going to galvanize a lot of people to be more active in the party, but I think that we're more than that. That one issue also.
You were Hillary Clinton's Michigan one of the top people for Hillary Clinton in the state of Michigan back in 08. She's announced she's not running. Were you disappointed to hear that?
When did she say that?
Last week.
I never heard that one.
Oh, okay.
She just said that she's not announcing now.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's all. I mean, and she'd be crazy to announce now.
Okay.
I mean, she's not going to run a four-year campaign when she can run a six-month campaign and get the nomination.
Okay.
She's going to take some time off, relax, and at the right time as things. But the earlier you announce, the bigger the target is on you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
She's going to look around and see that that she's, and if she feels right and everything else, that she's the person who could continue our leadership and give Obama his third term.
What happens now statewide with Gretchen Whitmer declining to run? Where are the Dems in terms of finding a credible challenger to Rick Snyder?
Looking hard, I guess. I mean, and that's not an easy one. I mean, but Gretchen, you know, again, all politics is local. And the first thing you do is take care of your family. And being a young woman herself, she knows the critical age for her daughters, and she puts that first right now. And you have to respect her in that, and it doesn't mean that she's not going to be around at some other time, but she's going to make certain that her family's right, and I agree with her in that.
What do you expect the use of coal at Michigan State to be in the near future, coal and coal ash for that matter?
Well, Michigan State is committed to the environment. And we are hoping that technology and everything else catches up to where we can continue our goal in that. I don't feel that a mandate of what percentage should be when you have someone who's committed anyway, we're going to get there.
You hear the phrase post-racial in circulation an awful lot these days. What do you think when you hear that phrase?
So you tell it to me again.
Post-racial.
What's that?
President Obama ushered in a period of a post-racial phase in America, being the first black president. Does that resonate with you at all? Or
I've never noticed that, except that because he's president, there's some people that are far hostile than they would be if someone else is president, like Ted Nugent. And, my God, you know, I mean, you don't wish anything bad for anyone because he's either going to die or be in jail. Well, I don't want him to die, but, you know, if they pick him up for some reason, I'm not going to raise hell.
Yeah. Joel Ferguson is the president of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees and the head of and founder and president of Ferguson Development. We've appreciated your time a lot.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This is very good. Thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry we don't have...
In the second half of Current State this morning, the origins of the Love Lansing hashtag. It's everywhere. We talk with Robin Miner-Swartz and Belinda Thurston. Also coming up, we talk with MLive's Angela Whitrock a little bit more about business and development. That's in our second half on Current State. Stay close.
Support for WKAR is provided by MSU Federal Credit Union, providing credit union members with 24-hour account access online and now on your mobile internet, insured by NCUA. And by MSU Alumni Association, offering opportunities for networking, career services, and community involvement with MSU alumni in your area and across the country. alumni.msu.edu.
Current state on WKAR. Welcome back. I'm Mark Bayshore. A unique community has evolved around the Love Lansing Twitter hashtag. It started out as a way for Lansing lovers to tweet the places they go and the things that they do. It's now full of retail and restaurant specials, sure, but also links to Lansing State Journal articles and cultural events, and it's even been used to rally volunteers during a holiday shortage of meal deliverers. Here with me to discuss the evolution of the Love Lansing hashtag are two early adopters, right? That's the lingo. Robin Miner-Swartz is the Director of Communications at the Capital Region Community Foundation, and Belinda Thurston is the owner of Just Be Yoga and the former digital news director for the Lansing State Journal. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Explain what, for the Twitter-averse among us, explain what the Love Lansing, what a hashtag is, and then kind of go into what Love Lansing, the Love Lansing hashtag is all about.
Well, a hashtag is a, for all intents and purposes, a subject line, so to speak, that you can follow looking up various thematics. So if you wanted to look up stuff about dogs, you could just put a hashtag, the number sign dog, and see what people are using that for to stimulate a conversation around it. And in Lansing, we have the number sign Love Lansing as a thematic to probably really just promote the positive things about Lansing and what's going on, and in some ways to help transform how Lansing is viewed.
Anything you want to add to that, Robin?
Well, the thing that's nice about it for me is not only is it a way to search sort of more broadly within a community like the Love Lansing concept, but the hashtag in general is just a really good way to track conversations. You know, last night I was following the Grammy hashtag because I was tracking people who were watching the Grammys. And it allows you to follow conversations and not be connected to those people. So unlike Facebook, where you've got to be a friend with someone to see what they're saying and read their opinions, on Twitter, even if you're not following a person, if you search for that hashtag and somebody's talking about that, you can find that information.
How far back does Love Lansing go? Do we know?
It's one of those nebulous things. Nobody's exactly sure how and where things started, but we think we have a patient zero for Love Lansing, and that is Julie Lynn Gibbons, and she is no longer in this area, but she used to run I3 Strategies, and she was, we think, one of the first users of the hashtag, and it got connected to a group called Accelerate Lansing, which was all about, which was sort of a local franchise of a national movement to kind of get communities invigorated and connected. Accelerate Lansing then grew into what's called YSG Lansing, which is Young, Smart, and Global. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those folks who are connected to that adopted the hashtag and really started to spread it. And it, the best part about it, though, is that it's grown really organically since then. That, you know, I can be on Facebook or Twitter now and see people go by in my newsfeed who I don't know, and they're using the hashtag. So we're seeing it picked up and carried by a lot of people.
Belinda, how do you use it as a follower of it?
Well, I use it not only within Twitter, but just as a term. I think that Love Lansing has grown even beyond its use as a hashtag within Twitter, spreading it as a term into Facebook and even almost saying, "Hi, you Love Lansing people," and you're more or less, you know, referring to a certain group of people who are out there actively promoting and using this. But certainly as a business owner, I can pretty confidently say that were it not for the Love Lansing hashtag, I don't think that Just Be Yoga would have gotten the attention that it got as quickly as it did when the business was created about 2 years ago.
What about you, Robin? How do you use it just as an individual?
I use it to connect to things that I just think are positive about our area in general, and not in any one particular realm, whether it's, you know, tourism or entertainment or just something about my neighbors or my neighborhood. The thing that really spoke to me about the hashtag is I'm a townie. I'm a homer. I was born here. I went to, you know, East Lansing High School, LCC, Michigan State. I never left. And I spent a lot of years explaining to people who did leave why I stayed and why I liked it. And during that time, I was also working at the State Journal, and I felt like I was the only person who loved Lansing. I would hear so much negative stuff from people about the region, and it really frustrated me because I always loved it. And so when this hashtag came about, I felt like I found my people. There are people out there who like this as much as I do. And it was really great affirmation for me thinking, okay, I stayed here for a reason and it's because of these people. It's because these people want to be connected. They want to be positive about the region. I am not, I don't feel like, no, this, you know, we've glazed over and ignored the bad things that are happening. I'm not that naive, but I do think it's a very smart way for us to talk about our city in a positive way and to work together to get it to a better place.
We're talking with Robin Miner Swartz and Belinda Thurston about the Love Lansing hashtag here on Current State on WKAR. Other cities have adopted a very similar kind of approach, I guess, with regard to social media, on Twitter specifically. Can we say that? I mean, has this become a fixture in other cities the way it has in Lansing?
You know, we were discussing this before coming on air. In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. We are using it in an organic way that is promotional and positive, as opposed to just putting the label, this happened in Lansing. So you could use the hashtag Lansing to just say, geographically, this is where something occurred, as opposed to indicating that you're going to see a certain type of content. So I think that it is being used a little differently, and we're not seeing the exact same thing in other cities.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add to that, Robin?
You know, I agree. In fact, when I travel, I get on Twitter before I go and I check out what's going on in the city and I try to find something like that, and I've yet to run across something that's that sort of all-purpose and yet organic. You know, we were looking at lists of other hashtags in the state of Michigan, and merely putting a hashtag in front of a city, I don't think develops that same community that we're talking about that builds up around Love Lansing.
Where do you think this is headed?
That's a great question.
That is a very good question.
Where in the trajectory are we in the growth of this thing?
I wonder if the momentum needs now to be carried beyond social media. I think that we're seeing evidence of it in some of our activities and some of the programs and events that are being held around town. I could say that maybe Vacant is an event that has gone out of the social media world into the community, but can we find other events and maybe an organizational structure that can continue to promote and create this positive image for Lansing, taking this movement, branding it, and maybe finding a good way to tap into more resources to be able to help improve our community as well as to expose all the good things that go on.
Robin?
It's sort of a double-edged sword because on the one hand, we do absolutely want what Belinda's talking about. But on the other hand, part of what's made Love Lansing so special is that no one has ownership of it and that it grows organically. But the downside of that is we have some fatigue, too. You know, with the Love Lansing hashtag, we've seen the evolution of things like TEDx Lansing, Ignite Lansing, Frost Fest, Trebuchet Day, all of these amazing, Vacant Lansing, all of these amazing events that the people who are most enthusiastic about Love Lansing have created, but they are sort of tapped out on their resources, and it's like, how many of these events can we create to keep being awesome? We need a 2.0. We need a new infusion of people and enthusiasm who can come in and say, I love Lansing too. I want to help. Here's my idea. Here's how I can contribute to making this a great city.
Did you tweet about your appearance on Current State?
Of course.
Loaded question there, if ever I heard one. Robin Miner Swartz is Director of Communications at the Capital Region Community Foundation. Belinda Thurston is the owner of Just Be Yoga and the former Digital News Director for the Lansing State Journal. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Mark.
Tomorrow night, it's Michigan State, U of M at the Breslin Center in men's basketball, the first game between the two programs ever, with both of them ranked in the top 10, and the Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexrow joins us to talk about it. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I am just fine. Did you see anything Saturday night in Purdue that gave you a better idea of how tomorrow night might go?
Well, I thought Michigan State played very well. You know, particularly considering the fact that Michigan was next on the schedule, that Travis Trice again didn't play because of the, you know, concussion concerns. And, you know, even though Purdue's not a very good team this year, that was a packed arena, very hostile crowd, and that's a team that was motivated to beat Michigan State. They've got a little bit of a history there, especially with Brandon Dawson. So I was impressed, and this team looks like it's getting better. So I guess I feel about the same. I feel the same about this game as I have for a while. I mean, I really think it's a toss-up. I would give Michigan State a little bit of an edge being at home, but I really wouldn't be surprised with just about anything tomorrow night.
How do you think Michigan is approaching the game?
Well, of course, Michigan is coming off just an unbelievable loss at Wisconsin, and I don't know if you saw the half-court shot Wisconsin hit to send that to overtime, but it was pretty unbelievable. And I mean, that's, you know, that loss. I mean, if Michigan wins that game, they can afford to lose tomorrow night and still, I believe, be in the best position in the Big Ten race, because Michigan's schedule really gets easier from here. They're really done playing the top teams on the road after tomorrow night. But losing at Wisconsin now, of course, if Michigan loses tomorrow night, Michigan is now two games behind Michigan State and would really have to scramble to end up in a tie for the title. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, Michigan, of course, has lost two of its last three, and the other one was a comeback at home to beat Ohio State in overtime. So Wolverines aren't playing their best basketball, but I have a feeling they will be more than motivated for this game.
I guess Saturday night in West Lafayette, judging from your column that I read this morning, there was an effort not to get too wrapped up in the Michigan game right after the win on Saturday night.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Tom Izzo said, you know, we'll talk about this when we get to the home soil, and they were kind of frowning on questions about Michigan, which I'd never really seen before after a game, you know, discouraged from asking about the next game. But I think there's a little bit of a concern. You know, you don't want to give the opponent any bulletin board material and things like that. And talking to players, you know, they're kind of downplaying it, saying, hey, big game, good team, but we're not making this, you know, the biggest game in our careers. So it's an interesting approach. They can say that. I still think you'll see tomorrow night, you know, 100% intensity on both sides.
No real clear-cut leader on this team, a la Draymond Green or Mateen Cleaves. How is this group getting it done?
Well, I do think they get along well, and that's huge. So, I mean, the Tom Izzo's talked all year about good chemistry, still need more leadership. I mean, Derek Nix is the captain, Russell Bird is the captain. I think both those guys have at times, you know, struggled a little bit to be vocal. I mean, Russell Bird, I think, is a good leader, but he doesn't play much. And Derek Nix, it's not a totally familiar, you know, role for him. But I think Keith Appling being named captain recently and the way he's playing, you can even see him on the floor. He'll be a little bit more vocal, telling guys where to go. He knows everything that's going on now. He's a junior. And I think he's been a big part of that. So he's not Mateen Cleaves. He's not the vocal, you know, grab a guy and slam him against the locker when you know, he's not doing well, things like that. But I think you need to have your point guard be some kind of a leader, and I think his emergence in that way has been big for Michigan State.
The Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexroad. It's Michigan tomorrow night at the Breslin Center. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Last Friday, the Michigan Civil Rights Commission announced it filed a complaint with the federal government to ban the use of American Indian mascots and imagery in Michigan schools. Now, the complaint cites 35 Michigan K-12 school districts for alleged discrimination. It also says research now shows the use of mascots causes harm to American Indian students by lowering self-esteem and it impacts student learning and achievement. The department says those results provide a legal basis to prohibit the use of the imagery and the mascots. Current State took to the streets of East Lansing and got a few opinions on the issue.
I think that that's an appropriate move. We don't have other groups of people as mascots, especially in a derogatory 17th century style fashion. Nor do we talk about, you know, tomahawks or any of those other things with other groups. So I think that that would be an appropriate measure.
Some symbols, you know, I know in the past, at least from growing up where I grew up, there were some that were okay, but kind of borderline. And so I think it should be up to the community at large to decide. But at the same time, I approve of the Michigan Council going to the feds to try to make this a bigger issue to make sure that all people are respected equally.
Sometimes I think we just get too... Everything is an issue, and I don't think it's always meant to be an issue. We make too big a deal and spend too much time on these issues when, like, if they're honoring that person or that chief or that tribe or something, I think that's an okay thing.
I think that if Native Americans are really offended by the symbols being used in schools, like, as mascots, then yes, we should take them out of the school systems as mascots.
Yeah, I always thought that Okemos High School using Chief Okemos as a mascot was to honor him. He is buried in the area, and those were the folks who were here first.
Those are the voices of a few folks in East Lansing responding to the Michigan Civil Rights complaint filed with the feds late last week about banning the use of Indian imagery in team mascots and uniforms. Anyway, it's time to rejoin MLive's Angela Whitrock. She joins us every Monday to talk about business and development in the economy. Nice to have you back. Nice session with Joel Ferguson.
Agreed. So, yeah, that was wonderful. Thanks for having me for that, too.
I think he liked your questions more than he liked mine, but that's okay. I won't take it personally. We did stir up the East Lansing downtown development with him, and he opined that it just needs to be made an awful lot bigger. I think he referred to it as a postage stamp type approach,
right.
And it's under 3 acres that,
yes.
that is owned by the East Lansing Downtown Development Authority. You're continuing to watch that story. What do you see happening?
Well, right now, I mean, there are 7 proposals that the city received, really 8, because one of the proposals was a two-parter, 2 different options. But, you know, the undercurrent there that you see is that it's hard to do what the city wants, which is a transformational development there at the edge of the campus, without taking care of what we call the old bank building, the old Citizens Bank building, that little strip mall, also on Grand River, and then the Evergreen properties. Now, all of those are still owned by the Strathmore Development Company affiliated holding companies. One is in foreclosure. They're, you know, consistent tax delinquencies on them, delinquencies or late payment. So you would hope, I guess, if you're one of those developers who is looking to score this deal with the city, that Strathmore would be interested in selling. And so far, at least from the proposals, it appears he is. What that means, what the price will be, that's anybody's guess.
I was struck by how many plans included a farmer's market.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the plans was kind of remarkable in that it called for a 35 to 40 vendor permanent city market that, when it wasn't being used, could be used for entertainment venues. That's pretty interesting because it would extend sort of that Valley Court Plaza, or that Valley Court Park, into the new development, which is, you know, right now it's sort of bounded off. But I think, you know, farmers markets are, they're not just trendy anymore. They're a real big part of a lot of communities, and having a dedicated space where you can go and pick up your local produce is sort of an important thing.
Now, DTN filed, DTN Management of Lansing Township, I think, filed a proposal as well. Are you tracking that? What's their role in this?
Yeah, they're, you know, it's kind of unusual. You don't usually think of DTN as a developer so much as a management firm for other apartments.
Rentals, yeah.
Right, and what they're looking at is they say they're in talks with Scott Chappelle from Strathmore Development to buy those properties. They have a plan that would include, like many of the plans, a farmer's market, a large hotel, retail, and, you know, really interesting possibilities, which, again, because it's DTN, I never would have expected to see something like that coming from them, but it looks like a viable proposal if they're selected.
East Lansing landlords now have to pass out voter registration to their tenants along with the keys, I guess, and proponents of this say it eliminates confusion over where to vote which is probably not too uncommon in East Lansing with so many students constantly moving in, that it helps to promote permanence. And Nathan Triplett seems to believe, a member of the Lansing or the East Lansing City Council, seems to believe it promotes longer-term involvement if people become accustomed to voting. What do you make of this?
Well, I think it's, we talked to Sam Singh, who's the new state rep for East Lansing, on Friday in a live chat, and we asked him, how important is this? Is getting the youth vote activated an issue? And he said yes. And until there's something like no reason absentee voting, which would have to come from the Secretary of State, policies like this on a smaller scale can really help bridge that gap. So, when I was a student, it was obviously confusing, and we all moved around a lot. But there is still some question from the landlords over, what happens. At first, there was supposed to be a kind of a hefty penalty if they weren't passing these papers out. Now it's just a civil infraction, but still it's, I think there's an element of the community that worries that the city council will be mandating sort of,
Who knows what?
Who knows what? Yes, that's the question. What's next?
Yeah. And Vic Loomis, I guess, was the only person to vote against that. But he said that according to the city charter, there's really no requirement that people vote. So it's
right.
He kind of suggested there's a little too much government going on here.
Yeah, I think that's, the role of government is something we continue to see debated at every level, and locally is no exception.
The state Supreme Court ruled on Friday that marijuana dispensaries are illegal, and that nothing in the Michigan medical marijuana law that was approved over 4 years ago now, permits them. State-registered patients either have to grow their own or they have to get a caregiver who is also licensed to grow it for them. Any thoughts on where this is going? This clarifies the landscape an awful lot, but in ways that some people don't like, I'm sure.
It doesn't, there was a lot of controversy in Lansing specifically because there were many, many dispensaries that cropped up immediately. Ingham County has a lot of medical marijuana patients, so there's going to be a lot of, it's going to be difficult, I think, if you're a patient to figure out how do you negotiate that now. How do you get your medicine that you're allowed by law without violating the law that says you can't get it in certain ways? That, I think, will continue to play out. Also, something we're following is how is that going to be enforced? I mean, will the sheriff and the prosecutor be prosecuting people for operating a de facto dispensary? Are cities supposed to now force dispensaries to close? I mean, really, the big question is what happens next? Mm-hmm.
That always seems to be the question with regard to medical marijuana. How big a business is this? I mean, dispensaries were really grew noticeably on the commercial landscape
right
there for several years.
Right, and in Lansing specifically, I mean, one thing that proponents constantly hammered away at was the fact that they were filling in a lot of vacant spaces. Now, it might not be a business that you wanted there, depending on your political leanings, but no one could doubt that at least it wasn't an empty storefront any longer. Now we're starting to see some of those turn over again, but still, it was a pretty large segment of the retail industry in Lansing, and when they were all sort of forced to close or were closing because they were unsure about what would happen to them, you started to see again the turnover. So what happens again next with these sites, with the folks who were making their living this way, is another big question. I mean, what are they going to do?
Yeah. We review business, the economy, and development every Monday morning with MLive's Angela Whitrock. Thanks, Angela.
Thanks, Mark.
The sounds of the pipa were among the many ringing in mid-Michigan's Chinese New Year celebration this past Saturday at the Meridian Mall. Hundreds were on hand to welcome the year 4711 on the Chinese calendar. Crowds enjoyed musical groups, Tai Chi demonstrations, calligraphy, and many other activities. You can see what it all looked like on our website, WKAR.org. We've entered the Year of the Snake. Coming up on Tuesday, we revisit a memorable chapter of recent American history, the role of the Birmingham Urban League in the 60s. We'll visit with a couple of guys who were there, Willard Walker and Clarence Wood, both directors of the Birmingham office. Also, Spartan Marching Band Director John Madden. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Worf. Joel Lindstroth is our producer. WKAR's Director of Broadcasting is Gary Reed. I'm Mark Bayshore. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR.
Hello, my name is Zhang Yitian. 我经常听 WKAR， 他是我的好朋友。